A new report from the Irish Penal Reform Trust has said that holding prisoners in isolation in excess of 22 hours and for extended periods of time must be abolished. This is because of the harm that can be caused to prisoners' mental health. So how big a priority should be made of prisoners' well-being? To discuss this, I'm firstly joined by the Executive Director of the Irish Penal Reform Trust, Deirdre Malone. Deirdre, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks very much.
This report that recommends, I suppose, what people often commonly refer to as solitary confinement being vastly reduced. How big an issue is solitary confinement among our prisons currently?
So the figures in the report kind of show us that about 11% of the prison population in October of last year, and they're the most recent figures that are available to us, are on a restricted regime, which means they're locked up behind a door alone for at least 19 hours a day. And the biggest number of those are locked up for 21 hours, and there's a smaller number locked up for 22 to 23 hours a day. And the reason that that's significant and that that's an issue is as you rightly pointed out, the impact on mental health.
Yeah.
It also has another impact that probably is not as well known, which is once you are on that type of restricted regime, your access to factors that are likely to reduce offending behaviour, so stuff like addiction services, stuff like education, training, all of these things that act to reduce reoffending on the outside, access to those is also reduced.
Okay.
So that's a significant issue, as well as the mental health issue.
Can I ask you though, Deirdre, the people, the 11% of prisoners who are on those restricted regimes, they're in their rooms or whatever for 19 to 20 something hours per day, which is obviously a lot. Is that a punitive thing? Are they when they're put on a restricted regime, is that because they've been violent or they've misbehaved in the prison in some way? Is this punishment?
The interesting thing about the findings that we made in the report is that the vast majority of those prisoners are making a request to be placed on what is known as protection. So essentially you're talking about a situation where a prisoner is going to a governor and expressing a fear and saying that they need to be kept safe and that equates to isolation.
So prisoners are requesting that they're going to be in the rooms themselves?
So prisoners who are in fear are requesting that regime is in place and that they're put in that regime.
Okay.
And one of the things, one of the questions we asked is, clearly, that's a very high number. So we need to ask ourselves, why is that happening? Why are people making these requests? And clearly, there's a couple of things that are linked to that. And one is obviously violence and fear of violence and perceived threats of violence, which is obviously a big issue on the outside as it is on the inside.
Yeah.
The other issue is, of course, that, you know, in terms of mental health provision in the Irish system, we heard at the launch, we just heard a very startling statistic, which is in the 1950s, we had about 31,000 mental health beds. Now we have about 1,000,
yes.
But we have far more. We have about 10 times more prison places. So there is an issue in terms of provision of mental health services in the community and particularly provision of mental health supports and secure care of good quality.
Okay.
So that's also an issue.
I obviously, you know, I'm not trying to undermine you in any way, and I'm not the expert in any way on this, but you're saying we don't want to be doing this anymore, but if the vast majority of this 11% of inmates who are on the restricted regime have requested it, they want this for themselves, is us stepping in and going, oh no, you can't have that anymore, could that not surely be causing them as much mental anguish? You know, if they want to be safe and secure in their own room and we're saying, no, you're not allowed to be, would that not be a source of significant anxiety for those people if we were to stop this regime?
That's a really, really important point to clarify. So we're not suggesting that what should happen is that governors should start turning people down.
Mm-hmm.
What we're suggesting is that, number one, clearly where there is a clear and present risk or a threat to life, obviously prison governors have the duty, which they take very seriously, to protect life in those circumstances. And sometimes that will mean placing someone on a restricted regime.
Okay.
But there are also a number of other measures that could be provided that would reduce the number of people who are requesting that protection. For example, one point that was made very clearly during the course of the launch was that often, particularly traveller prisoners, if somebody is identifying as a traveller, have a very heightened fear of being targeted because of their status. And there is now a very successful program introduced where someone can come and talk to them and explain that isn't the case. And that there's no need for them to be requesting protection. And that type of project has seen some really good success rates. And that's the kind of just very practical things that we're talking about in terms of reducing numbers. Also okay. providing those requesting with information about, you know, the likely implications of that. So, you know, that okay. their access to courses and training will be reduced by virtue of that. So we're not suggesting that there is simply a blanket end okay. to the provision of protection, which is very, very important. Yeah. But what we are suggesting is we have to look quite closely at the reasons why people are requesting.
The other thing I wanted to ask you is you have this 11% who are on this restricted regime, and many of them are there at their own request, and obviously maybe some of them don't need to be there even at their own request. It might just be a fear issue. But equally, some people are on the restricted regime because the prison authorities have said, look, you've done X, Y or Z and now we're going to put you on restriction. If we don't have solitary confinement for prisoners who misbehave or maybe are violent or maybe threatening somebody else or whatever, What sanctions do we have for prisoners? I mean, we can't go back to hard labour. We're not going to go back to corporal punishment. Is this not the one thing left that prison officers have in terms of trying to keep control within the prisons?
So there's no provision in Irish law for using solitary confinement as a punishment. The deprivation of liberty, the sentence that's passed down by a judge, is the punishment when one commits a serious crime. In terms of what's available, if there are, you know, transgressions yeah. within the prison, there's a number of measures that are available and are used. And it involves withdrawing certain privileges, withdrawing, you know, access to certain things, you know, ensuring that, you know, good order is maintained within the prison environment. So it is not the case that solitary confinement is or should be used as punishment. There are many other ways to maintain order within prisons. And what we have found is that, for example, you know, one of those things is investing in ensuring that staff are trained in conflict de-escalation, ensuring that we have services in place to address violent behaviour where it happens and ensure that there is an intervention. And okay. So there's many kind of alternatives to simply building prisons within prisons, which doesn't actually serve society. If you want to see a reduction in crime, if you want to see rehabilitation, if you want to see effective interventions, including, you know, treatment of addictions, etc., then, you know, that isn't going to happen if we try to continue to build prisons within prisons. It doesn't serve society, it doesn't serve prisoners, and it doesn't serve prison staff either, because protection regimes are not easy to run. And what is a much better scenario? As long as you're keeping your prisoners safe, what is a better scenario is ensuring that as much as possible prisoners have access to education and all the other services yeah. that go to addressing offending
behaviour. Last question for you, Deirdre. Just, I remember when talking about penal reform in the past, the push towards all single rooms in prisons was an issue, because they weren't, at one stage, they were not all single rooms. Obviously, they were shared rooms, and I'm sure some of them are still shared rooms, but the push is towards that. Is it not an inevitable consequence of if everyone is in a single room that people who are restricted to the room for whatever reason will end up on their own, because we have pushed away from the double cell and all that kind of stuff? Is this not a consequence of previous reforms?
No, I mean, I think this is a consequence of trying to deal with, you know, a high incidence of violence within the prison estate. Mm-hmm. And that is what needs to be tackled. I mean, the issue of single cells is an issue of having some amount of privacy during the day to sleep, essentially, to sleep on your own. That's not the same as being on your own for the majority of hours of the day and not having that normal social interaction, including interaction, you know, with service providers within the prison environment, including other prisoners. You know, we all need social contact, and reducing or removing social contact does not lead to good outcomes when it comes to people serving their sentence.
All right. Thank you for talking to us. That is Deirdre Malone, their Executive Director of the Irish Penal Reform Trust. I'm joined now in studio by someone else who knows a good deal about this, John Cuff, former prison officer. John, you heard much of what Deirdre had to say there about 11% of prisoners are on this restricted regime. We need to be moving away from that. What's your experience of all of this?
Basically, Deirdre has told us what we already know. and prison officers on a daily basis are dealing with the very things, suggestions that she has come up with. I just saw a quick blurb this morning of what they were talking about. The one thing I noticed was that it was very short on actual solutions. You're dealing with a very finite space. You have 13 prisons in the country. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't start in the prison. It starts out in society. You have various gangs, and when I was in Castlereagh, that fell out in Galway. Both, all these gangs wound up in Castlereagh prison. They brought their grudges in with them. You have a duty of care. Rehabilitation is an aspiration in the prison service. But one thing you take really thing is that you take care of people in there. So if these
keep
guys
keep them safe, in other
keep
words.
Keep them safe is a bottom line. It's not rocket science or anything like that. So the problem is that in Castlereagh, you had one big yard. Now it has improved somewhat since they've built two small yards where you can exercise some. But at one stage, I had in my charge over 25 different guys that were under protection. Now, they were for different reasons. They didn't get on with this group. That group had to threaten them, whatever. And you couldn't exercise that 25 as a group after. So you're trying to maintain the normal stuff in a prison. I send them to work, the library, the censor's office, the PE and all of that. You have X amount of staff. And unfortunately, it's not a hotel that you can tick off in the morning, I want to do this or I want to do that. We deal, prison officers are aware, everything that the Penal Reform Trust has said. Prison officers are dealing with it. I'm not speaking for prison officers, by the way. I'm 10 years gone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's common sense. This is not, they're not telling prison staff something new, or no prison officer is going to pick up and say, oh God, we never thought of that one. It's common sense. Prison officers have tried every single thing. This thing about educating prison, we have done it. We've spoken to them. I've spoken to them.
And there are workshops, aren't there, and kitchens and educational stuff. And
the problem though here is that if a fella is under threat, serious threat now, that you can't put him into a workshop because there's access to every type of thing in there. We say if it's a carpenter shop, you can imagine yourself. If it's a braille shop, machine.
Or so a kitchen or whatever,
anything,
knives
kitchen,
or what have you. Or even spoons,
yes.
You could do
so
damage.
So you're constantly making decisions. Spoon is a weapon. A toothbrush is a weapon.
That sounds ridiculous, and I thought, no, but it's true,
no, it's
isn't it?
Anything is a weapon.
You can sharpen a spoon.
I had one of my last duties was organising the prisoners for exercise in Castlereagh, and we got a call on the radio that a prisoner had been slashed out in the yard. And went out, there was a cut down the side of his face. It's horrific, but you deal with it in the moment. The prisoner that did it felt he was under threat, did it. I spoke to him after and I told him, you're going to be locked up for your own protection here and all that. And he insisted, no, I want to go back out to the yard. So the instructions I got was, okay, if he does, he has to sign a piece of paper stating that he's prepared to take the risks and all that.
Yeah.
He wasn't out in the yard 3 minutes when he came to me. I stood monitoring it. He wanted to go back in again. So we deal with the reality, not aspirational. It's very easy. And I welcome the Penal Reform Trust. The more eyes you have on prisons, the better. But, you know, we need something more than soft solutions.
It's interesting because there's just two tweets have come in and they're kind of the polar opposites, John. Paul says, it drives me mad that prisoners' rights are being talked about. Why should it be a holiday camp? It's a punishment. And there's an awful lot of people of that view. Mm. And I'm not completely anti that view myself, I have to say.
Yes.
I think that there should be a punishment for a crime. And Kira, someone else on Twitter says, we know that punitive measures in prisons don't work. The best way to reduce recidivism and increase positive outcomes is to make prisons rehabilitative. Look at the work that some people do through foundations in Mountjoy and all that kind of stuff. Is there a constant tug of ideology around prisons where some people think, do you know what? You've done the crime and now you do the time and is it pleasant? No, but that's what you deserve. And then there's other people going, no, we must treat prisoners in a more kinder and humane and rehabilitative way. Is there a constant conflict between those ideologies?
That's a great question, Kira. First time I ever heard that. There is a huge conflict, and the conflict though is in broader society. Within the prison officers work in the real world. So by nature, most of them are communicative. They speak, they talk, they chat to prisoners and all that. There's one or two that would be the hang them and flog them brigade and that type of thing. So the bottom line is you open in the morning with X amount, you close tonight with that same amount, that nobody's hurt, that nobody's injured. But you're looking at the reality, and the reality is X amount of staff, X amount of space. If we take the two, the H's, the hospitals, the housing and the homeless, they can't solve them. Prisons are going to slip way down into that thing. Overall, prisons are well ran, they've heat, they've warmth. The bottom line is you have a choice. Don't commit a crime, you don't go to jail, you don't have to worry about those things. I do welcome groups like Penal Reform and all that, but I think that the real experts, and I hate using this word, you have to actually work in the jail to see the reality. Is there a governor with this group? Is there ex-prison staff with Penal Reform? You can come. I recall a number of years ago, they brought about the solitary cell in Mountjoy. I had done a master's and my thesis was on solitary cell, and they came up with 14 resolutions how to solve it. We were doing it for 15 years prior to that up in Arbor Hill. So it's joining the dots and talking to everybody that's involved in it rather than going off on a side shoot that this is the solution. There are no
Can
easy
I ask
solutions.
You a last question, John? When I was talking to Deirdre there, I said, you know, she said that the majority of people in solitary are actually, they've requested it because they're afraid. And the rest, I said, is it restrictions put because of behaviour? And she said, yes. But she said, that doesn't have to be. There are other potential restrictions or punishments that can be doled out to people if they misbehave. What are the other things that you can do to, I suppose, punish or sanction a prisoner apart from solitary?
There are a number of things, Ciara. One thing is loss of recreation at night time or access to the hall and that. There used to be, I think governors are reluctant now to do it, take some remission off them. So they'd eat into their one quarter remission.
Okay.
I think there was a number of court challenges to that, and I don't think they're comfortable going near that anymore. Now, unless things have radically changed since I left the job, for a serious assault on staff or something serious, there was 3 days close confinement. The governor had the power then to isolate a prisoner for 3 days in a single cell with an hour's exercise. Staff are very looking into that. Staff actually want all prisoners out of cells because it's easier to keep an eye on them. Suicide rate drops, self-inflicted drops. If you have someone behind a door, you really don't know what is going on in there.
So really all they have is solitary or restriction on social time. That's it?
That's it.
So the other sanctions she's talking about bringing about is if we do away with solitary is, because I see it, and I'm sure the text line is going to kill me for this, but I see it a bit like parenting. I have an arsenal of things I can do way of punishing my children if they do something wrong or sanctioning them in some way. And if the punishment is fairly watery, it's unlikely that I'm going to make much impact on their behaviour with it.
Of course. And they are aware of that. And I know that shortly after I left, something came in where they could appeal some of these sanctions that governors were given, where you had a solicitor come in to represent them possibly. And that put staff on the back foot because it was minor punishments. So it then became that guys were reluctant to actually fill in a form of, you know, a report of something going wrong because they knew they were going to be challenged every step of the way of it. Like, you know, it's... prisons are going to be prisons always.
Yeah, and I think it is a difficult system to get right. I think there is a tug between the two of them. But in any case, thank you very much for coming and speaking
thank
to us
you,
there.
Ciara.
There's John Cuff there, former prison officer, and lots of people. I might take some of the texts a little bit later on all of this. Some of them are not very sympathetic, I might point out.